Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Who's this, Steve? Oscar Peterson. Is that like Benjamin Moore? Does he sell paints too? You know what? Instead of telling a story right now, we'll put it off a little bit. I'll take advantage of the fact that we have AJ in Ventura. He's got a reverse shoulder replacement question, and I have the man, Dr. Michael Stone. AJ, thanks for calling in. You there? Is AJ there in Ventura? AJ, you there?
Hello?
Hi. How are you, AJ?
Hi. Good.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a security guard. We've met.
We have. Good.
Yeah, you were actually supposed to do my hip replacement.
Okay.
Last month.
Okay.
But, in between, I tore my left shoulder up and had to have surgery, so.
Okay.
What kind of surgery did you have, AJ?
Pardon?
What kind of surgery did you have on your shoulder?
Torn rotator cuff, labrum, bicep tendon.
And what kind of surgery did they do? They fix it or did they do a reverse shoulder replacement?
No, they fixed that. Dr. Piper fixed it, a friend of yours.
Oh, in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
Oh, I love him. Cool.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
So what's the question you have?
Okay, so it's my right shoulder. I've known for a long time that at some point I'm going to need a reverse shoulder replacement. I have the MRI that I had a couple years ago. But I've got full function. I'm still able to train like a bodybuilder and stay in good shape. But it's I have a feeling by the way it feels now that it's on its last leg. I've talked to three different doctors. I've never been able to get a straight answer on how sturdy they are as far as when I go back to start working out if I get it done.
This is the perfect guy to ask, Dr. Michael Stone. So hang on, and we're going to give you your answer. Your phone is breaking up, so I'm going to cut you off, but listen to Dr. Stone off the air. So go ahead.
Well, so AJ, so
he's 59.
So the way that I look at this is, you're 59. You've had a surgery on the shoulder already, so you've had cuff dysfunction, and it sounds like you're a pretty high demand guy. You're working out, you're lifting weights, and that's great to continue to do that, to stay strong. The issues that I think about when looking at somebody for a reverse total shoulder replacement is how much cuff do you have left? How functional are you right now? And what kind of things do you plan on doing in the future to stay functional? So in terms of the longevity of these implants, the data on the reverse replacements is not as there's not as much of it as there are on hip and knee replacements. So we know it's about 85% at about 15 years so far. So we don't know the long-term results, but we know the long-term results, and they hold up very well. We don't know how well they do in somebody that is lifting weights and that is pretty hard on it. So it's like the last set of tires you have on your car, right? It's going to wear out eventually. And you can do a revision at some point. I would say hold off as long as you possibly can. The two things that I think about are, one, the status of your cuff. So if you do have a tear, that might get bigger and that might decrease your function, even with a reverse replacement.
Really?
So that would be
the
one.
The rotator cuff that has value in a person where you're just using the deltoid to lift the arm in a reverse.
It does, and it's mostly the posterior cuff. It's the infraspinatus and teres minor, because that's where you get a lot of your external rotation, which helps you get your hand behind your head in order to do your hair and those kinds of things. So it can be beneficial the more cuff that you do have. So I'm a big fan of repairing the cuff as much as possible when I do a reverse replacement. The other thing to consider is how much bone loss you have. So if you do start to erode the bone away because of arthritis, you can change the long-term outcomes of the implant, because you can start wearing away the bone. Those are things that take years to happen. So I would recommend using the shoulder, stay as functional as you can for as long as you can. There's nobody telling you that you need a shoulder replacement at this point. I would say hold off as long as you can and stay active and keep your motion and keep your strength.
Good answer, Dr. Stone. All right, I'm going to take another caller and then we'll get into the stories. Let's go to Sean in San Diego. You're on with Dr. Clapper and Dr. Stone. How can I help?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling in regards to I've had like many shoulder separations, or excuse me, a shoulder separation that I'm dealing with right now, but many of where my shoulders have been dislocated on both sides. And right now I'm dealing with pain. Really ridiculous pain. I can tell it's not just my muscles. It's like my nerves and stuff too. I can feel it in the back of my shoulder. I can feel it in the front of my shoulder and down the side of both of them. It's more pronounced on the left shoulder, though.
Sean, what do you do for a living?
I am a morale booster.
Okay. That's kind of what I am. From now on, that's what I'm going to tell people. What do you do for a living? I'm a morale booster.
I like that.
I love that. So teach us a little bit, Dr. Stone, about the difference in a dislocated shoulder in an 18-year-old versus a 35-year-old versus a 60-year-old.
Well, that's a great question. And a shoulder separation is different than a shoulder dislocation. A shoulder separation is typically what we call an AC dislocation, where your clavicle and your scapula, those can become separated. And typically those don't need surgery. Sometimes mm-hmm. they do. So that's a different entity. So we're going to focus on a ball and socket dislocation.
Correct.
And the ball and socket one is the more serious one. So in a younger person, a shoulder dislocation, it can be from multiple things. But typically if it's from a traumatic event, a football player, or something like that, they dislocate their shoulder. It usually goes out the front. Mm-hmm. That can tear the labrum. That can tear the capsule. And it's very rare to tear the rotator cuff in a young patient, in an 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. So typically, that can also come off with a small piece of bone. That's called a bony Bankart. And that typically is an operative case because you don't have that bony stability to your shoulder. So you, like we were talking about earlier, I would recommend restoring that anatomy to give them stability so they can get back to their sports. Somebody who's a little bit older, now you start worrying about the rotator cuff. When that ball comes out of the socket, it can actually tear through the rotator cuff because your rotator cuff does weaken as you get older. It happens to everybody. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, with an acute loss of function, meaning I was able to lift my arm, I dislocated, and now I can't lift my arm, I would be very concerned for a rotator cuff. And I just saw a patient the other day that had that specific problem. Mm-hmm. You get an MRI and you see a big rotator cuff tear. That's somebody I would want to fix their rotator cuff. I would not rehab them. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of my personal bias because I think your long-term results for your repair are going to do much better if I fix it and restore your anatomy if you did have an acute tear.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. How do you think about it?
I think that the anatomy changing as you age, the statistics show you dislocate the ball and socket joint and you're 18 – it's probably going to keep coming out to the point
I agree.
That there are surgeons who take the first dislocation and you're 18 and tell you you should have it fixed. We all saw Kevin Love have his shoulder dislocated by Kelly Olynyk on the basketball court in front of us. And sure enough, he went to David Olchek at special surgery and Kevin Love had his shoulder fixed, the labrum fixed for the dislocation. From the very first dislocation,
I would fix,
not rehab.
I would fix it too. And rehab is typically what a lot of people are trained to do. The risks are what I worry about. If you dislocate it again, what are you doing to the cartilage?
Right.
What are you doing to the
right.
bone? Maybe right. now you're starting to wear away the bone or fracture the bone. And that changes the game completely.
So now you're a 60-year-old. They come to your office. They decide to take a snowboard lesson. Terrible conditions.
Good for
they
them.
Fall. Boom. Now they first dislocation in a 60-year-old. Okay, let's assume the rotator cuff isn't injured. It's an isolated dislocation of the ball and socket joint. You're 60. Statistics say there's a very unlikely chance that they're going to dislocate a second or a third or a fourth
Correct.
Time. Those are the people you put back into place.
Correct.
Teach me, Dr. Stone. Do you put them in a sling? Do you let them start moving it right away? Do you protect them for 6 weeks? What do you do when someone at 60 who dislocates their shoulder for the first time?
Well, this is a functional 60-year-old.
Right.
But – so we keep that in mind. We want to get them back and active to snowboarding again in no time, right? So that's the goal. As you get older, your shoulder does stiffen up over time. So even people that have pretty loose joints when they're younger tend to get stiffer as we get older. And your shoulder capsule, which is that real thick capsular tissue that helps keep the ball and the socket together, that does stiffen up. So generally, people lose motion as they get older, and they're less likely to re-dislocate. So that's somebody that if they didn't have a rotator cuff tear, they definitely have a labral tear, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the labrum needs to do its job as it was when you were younger. The labrum becomes much more important when you're younger. It's healthier tissue, and it really acts like a bumper when you're bowling or something like the bumpers to help keep the ball centered on the socket. So you rehab them. I typically keep people in a sling for 2 weeks, let them start to do some gentle active motion on their own, and then we get them in a therapy program to help strengthen their shoulder again from the injury. But typically it takes a couple weeks icing it, resting it before you're comfortable enough to start moving the shoulder around again with a therapist.
Perfect. All right, we'll take a break, Steve. Coming up next, Let's get into today's topic. You just heard us talk about aging. The same injury in a young person versus an older person treated differently. This is a fascinating topic for surgeons. It's a fascinating topic in how your body works as a surgeon. But what about the world of art, the world of sports? You're going to listen to the words of Carlos Santana about aging, changing as you age, and how Michael Jordan fights it. He fights Father Time. It's fascinating. We'll get into it. Coming up next here on the Weekend Warrior Show, here on ESPN LA 710. I love it. That's Jimmy Buffett. Spot I surf at in Hawaii. He's there sometimes. I haven't paddled up to say hi to him ever, but I will. I met Jerry Lopez out at this spot. It's about a half a mile out into the ocean, and it's the greatest. I cannot wait. I'm going to go in a couple of weeks. I'll tell you all about it when I come back. Rodney Dangerfield. And we're talking about aging. My favorite Rodney Dangerfield line about aging. At my age, eating has replaced sex. So I put a mirror over the kitchen table. Oh, I love that guy. Today's topic, because I have the great Dr. Michael Stone, and how different we treat patients with the same injury. If you're 20, different than when you're 35, different than when you're 60. Made me think all week about art and sports and the difference in aging in these worlds as well. Here is 22-year-old Carlos Santana, an unknown guitar player at Woodstock 50 years ago. Doesn't something happen in your heart when you hear this music? Something's happening in his heart. It may be the mescaline he's on, I don't know, but something's happening. The joy of writing this song and sharing it with the world is contagious. Contagious, Caldwell Pope, by the way. It's not contagious, but anyway. And now listen to him 50 years later. Oh my God! It's as though he got better! You do something. Dr. Stone, I'm 62 years old. I've been an orthopedic surgeon in practice for 31 years. 500 surgeries a year times 31. I've done over 15,000 surgeries. I'd like to believe my hands sound like this. There I am. That's me in surgery yesterday. There's some wisdom that takes place in my fingers. I'm not saying I'm closing my eyes and making the guitar sing like this, but when I do knee surgery and hip surgery, shoulder surgery, there's a intimacy that you get as an older surgeon, and it's such a joy to have you here as a young surgeon and to talk about this topic. So, let's go through Carlos Santana, in his own words, his journey, and his embracing aging and Father Time.
My father's a musician. When I saw how people, specifically women, looked at my dad when he played the violin and when he sang, I looked at them and I looked at him and I was like, whoa. My dad would draft me once in a while. He would say, you know, so-and-so is not as good. Put on this mariachi suit. But I couldn't get a sound on the violin. I didn't like the way I sounded. I didn't like the way the violin smelled. And I didn't like the way it felt. But I tried to please my dad as much as I could. And I won a 2 or 3 contests in the fairs, playing Fascination.
But it was the guitar that he really fell in love with.
But eventually he saw that, you know, I was crying a lot. And so I told him, I don't want to play the violin. I want to play the guitar.
Okay.
When did you figure that out?
In Tijuana, watching the strippers strip.
In the 1950s, Santana cut his teeth as a guitar player among the patrons and prostitutes in the strip joints on Tijuana's Avenida Revolucion.
You know, I started noticing that you play... you know, like honky tonk. And the woman started walking just like... I was like, oh.
That's called control. Power. Fantastic. Carlos Santana. This is from his interview at PBS.
Otis Rush is just a pure voice of trueness. There's not one note on any record I ever heard where Otis Rush, it has any distance from his heart. The first time I saw Mr. Otis Rush, it gave me the confidence right there. It's time to leave your home. It's time to leave mom and dad and really become what you were born to do.
So here's his journey. Violin, gets started, hates it, goes to the guitar, falls in love, sees the power of the guitar, how it can get women to take their clothes off or whatever it is that's inspiring him. Then he hears Otis Rush and says, yup, that's what I want to be like. Just like you, Dr. Stone, you saw that trauma surgeon. Yep, I want to do orthopedics. I don't want to be a psychiatrist. I don't want to be a pediatrician. I want to use those tools. Same thing for me. Frank Stinchfield at Columbia. I took this hip. I used to saw and a drill. I'm the son of a carpenter, and I'm going, Cupid just shot an arrow in my heart. That's what I want to do. You literally take your hand. You go, that's what I want to do. That's what happened when he heard Otis Rush. I'm going to do that. Now... we get to be 22 years old, and we're at Woodstock with the great and Grateful Dead, Jerry Garcia, waiting to go on after he does his gig, and here's the snafu.
Jerry Garcia, he says, what time are you going? I says, oh, well, I think I heard that we're going two or three bands after you. He goes, well, man, you make yourself comfortable. Apparently, we're not going till like 12 at night or something, you know.
So you didn't think you were going to play... for all day, you know, yeah, you had a whole day to kill.
Especially because nobody knows us, so we're going to be at the mercy wherever they put us, you know?
Garcia, he says, offered him some hallucinogens to help kill the time. But no sooner had the drugs kicked in than a call came from the stage.
They said, you got to go on now. If you don't play now, you're not going to play at all. So I trust that God is present and he's going to give me what I request. Please keep me in time. Please keep me in tune. I'll never do this again, I promise.
And what happened?
It was kind of like a wrestling match.
Were you hallucinating while you played?
Totally.
Totally. Listen to how it takes over his body. He can sense he's just a vehicle. When Ed Bradley asked Bob Dylan, how did you write those songs? Bob Dylan said, I don't know. It's just like they came through me. He can't even take credit, Bob Dylan, for the genius that he is. He just sees that it just came through him. Listen to Carlos Santana describing the energy, the love, the passion for the guitar on Mescaline going through him.
I mean, look, you hear the sound. It's over here. And then it comes down through here, through your fingers, in the pickup of the guitar, through a wire that goes to this PA out there. And it goes like that to the people, like an ocean of people, and then it comes back.
And then it comes back. When those patients come back to your office, Dr. Stone, they come back and they thank you because they don't have pain anymore. It's the coming back part that keeps you coming, that makes you want to keep doing it. What about the process, fighting Father Time, evolving and aging? Listen to Carlos Santana.
Same thing that happened to the Beatles when they saw Bob Dylan. You know, instead of like, she loves you, yeah, you know, go from that to like, you know, Sgt. Pepper's or Revolver or Michelle. What Bob Dylan did to the Beatles, Miles Davis and Weather Report and Coltrane did to us. You know, it made us, like, grow up.
Why would you change, Carlos Santana? Because you have to. You got to follow your heart.
Everybody Clyde Davis, Bill Graham, my mom, everybody.
Even your mom.
Even my mom says, mijo, you know, this. Why are you going this way? Musically, why does it have to be so extreme? And I says, mom, even I don't know. All I know that I have to follow my heart.
You got to follow your heart. All right. He embraces the change. He follows his heart. Now let's listen to someone who's going to, he's going to meet Father Time on the basketball court and challenge him to a one-on-one. This is the 10-year anniversary of Michael Jordan getting into the Hall of Fame. You think he's happy about being in the Hall of Fame? This is Michael Wilbon's interview with him, which tells you everything about Michael Jordan being the opposite of Carlos Santana in aging.
Well, it's not that I didn't embrace it as an opportunity, as an accomplishment, as a privilege. I just didn't think I was ready for it now. You know, I think that for me, it's like, I don't mean it in a bad way. Like you're going out in the pasture and you're just going to graze until you basically die, you know. And
he's depressed.
For me, and I'm not saying that for every person, you know, because I think a lot of people look at it in a much more prestigious, you know, eyesight. Me, I still look at it like that. He's just said not right now.
Not right now. He don't want to be in the Hall of Fame. He's not ready to say it's done. And he don't want people telling him he's done.
I feel like I still got so much to do. I love the game. I'm always going to love the game. I'm always going to feel like, you know, or keep people off guard by not knowing, you know. Still play the game if I choose to play the game, you know. And I can run with the young horses. Don't put me out grazing yet, you know. But it's still my choice, you know. So it seems like it sounded so finite to the end of something, and I wasn't ready for that. You know, I'm still not ready for that.
He's not ready for it. And many of you hanging on the line, hang on the line. I'll get to you. We got to talk about aging in your own bodies. But here's Michael Jordan.
Not now. It's a tremendous accomplishment. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to diminish that for anybody else. But for me, it signifies something so finite and the end of something. And you know, basketball is my love. Always have been, and I can't ever, you know, envision an ending of something like that. You know, that passion that I have for the game until I'm dead and gone. Until that's when it's, well, I can wait. I'm not in a rush.
My mom told me, Robbie, you'll sleep when you die. That's why I did 12 hours of surgery yesterday, and here I am on the radio the next morning.
My competitive nature, when I do watch a game, I try not to watch as much because I'm so critical, you know, of how the game's being played, you know, how the kids are playing the game. How I would play it totally different, you know. That's just my competitive nature about watching the game that I truly love, and I've taken a great pride in trying to enhance while I play the game. Not that the kids are not enhancing the game. I think they're overlooking a lot of the things that in old age or in maturity I can see a lot more.
And here's where he talks about the physicality. He describes the aging and the physicality. He's a professional athlete. You just get old. There's nothing you can do about it. Like a wall. The wall just gets taller and taller. He can jump over that wall. He's Michael Jordan. But eventually you can't. And so you use your brain. You get smarter. You try to get around the wall or go through the wall. To him, though, he's going to keep trying to jump over that wall.
The body is probably the biggest thing that allows us to, or makes us to walk away from the game because we can't respond physically. Mentally, I still think I'm just as sharp as when I played the game, probably even more sharper. It's a big distinct difference, you know. I think that when I guess I was talking to Charles Oakley yesterday, I said, you know, it's amazing about, you know, that wall continues to get taller physically, but mentally you always figure a way around the wall.
You got to follow your heart, just like with Carlos Santana. Does, and so does Michael Jordan. There's nothing else he's this in love with.
Nothing's going to equal basketball, and if they say what they do now equals what they did playing a game of basketball, then, you know, I beg to differ about those two individuals and their competitive nature. For me, you know, I feel like I'm the most fierce competitor there is. I don't think I'm ever going to find something to equal the game of basketball for me. You know, golf comes close, but even then, I mean, you know, it's not a mastery for me in that game, you know, as basketball was. So, am I worried? No, because I come to understand that I'm never going to find something that, you know, drives me as much as basketball did, you know, and makes me that much more competitive when basketball was a part of my life.
It's just so nice to just hear what love is. You know, it's a word, it's a feeling. You love your kids, you love your wife. Love. This is what love sounds like when you're Michael Jordan, loving the game. Carlos Santana, loving the guitar.
The biggest thing about it for me was duplication, being that staying on that highest of level of excellence, you know, showing that, you know, it's not easy to get here. Or once you get here, it's harder to stay. And the challenge of staying and playing at that same level was the beauty that I saw. And I feel like if I can ever think about, you know, what I miss about the game was being that consistent each and every day. That, you know, every time a naysayer said he can't do this, well, I think I can prove you wrong. Yeah, I think I can do that.
He's so inspiring. You want to be like Mike, like Carlos, when you go to the operating room every single time. All right, coming up next, I'll take your calls. Stay on the line. Jack, Tony, you're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Toby Keith, country music.
Speaking the truth.
Country music reminding me of Clint Eastwood. I think it was Trace Adkins was with Clint Eastwood recently. I don't know. He's almost 90 years old, or he is now. I don't even know how old Clint Eastwood is. He's old. And he said it was the greatest to have spent time. He did the music for one of his movies and had lunch with Clint Eastwood. And they're having lunch. And all of a sudden, Clint Eastwood says, okay, nice to talk to you, but I got to go. And Trace Adkins said, where are you going? You're 90 years old. Well, have lunch, sit down, relax a bit. And Clint Eastwood said to him, I got to go. I'm making another movie. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Because you're so busy. Give it a break. You can rest. Clint Eastwood said, nope. I don't want to let the old man in. That's a country way of looking at things. You fight Father Time. You don't want to let him in. That's kind of listening to Michael Jordan. He don't want to let the old man in. All right, let's do some calls. I do have to tell you where the locks is. If I were to say to you, you want to have the best locks? Get on a plane, go to LAX, which is a nightmare now, by the way. Go to LAX and fly to New York, get a taxi, and go to Zabar's. You'll have the best locks on a bagel that you'll ever imagine in your life, or Barney Greengrass. Guess what? You don't have to do that. You don't have to go to the airport. You don't have to get on a plane. Because they ship the locks that they sliced in New York on a plane. Next time it'll be in the seat next to me. I can't wait. Who's the passenger? It's not. It's just a bunch of locks. That's exactly what this is like. Flying here. My mouth is watering already because I've got to tell you. It's sliced in New York and they give it to you here in L.A. The deli? Mort's Deli. Oh, my God. It's on Reseda Boulevard. It's up from Ventura Boulevard there. Mort's Deli. It's been there for a million years. Their locks is my favorite locks in Los Angeles because it's sliced in New York. Try it. Let me know. You can follow me on Twitter, at Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm the only orthopedic surgeon looking for locks evaluations on Twitter. I think that's like a world's record or something. All right, let's do some work. Let's go to Jack in Santa Monica. You're on with Dr. Clapper and Dr. Stone. How can I help you?
Hi, doctor. I originally called you to find out about this nano knee surgery.
Yeah.
I've got two bad knees, and but I'm fascinated. I'm 81 years old, so I'm fascinated with all this talk about old age because although I feel it in my knees and other parts of my body, you know, I'm still creating. I feel that if I don't create, I die.
Right.
It's a very strong feeling.
How old were your Jack? How old were your parents when they died?
My mother was 87,
mm-hmm.
and my father died at 72 in a car wreck.
Mm-hmm.
He was. We both have bad eyes at nighttime, and he drove out in front of a police car and you know,
wow.
It was just over.
What did he do for a living?
What did he do for a living?
What did he do for a living, your father?
He was an oil leaser. He went around the country leasing land for oil wells.
Huh. And what did your grandfather do?
He was called Catch 'Em Alive Jack. He was quite a character. He was a friend of Teddy Roosevelt, and
your grandfather was friends with Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Oh my God! You mean the guy who literally is on Mount Rushmore was a friend of your grandpa?
Yep. And not only that, but he had two kids, my uncles Temple and Louis, who at 5 and 9 rode to New York to meet Teddy's coming in on from an African safari.
My God!
And so they're the Abernathy boys. There's all kinds of online stuff about them.
So, Jack, you're 81 years old. What year were you born?
1939.
And what year was your dad born?
1886, I believe. I'm not sure about that.
So I'm talking right now to a guy whose dad, you, I'm talking to you. Your father was born in the 1800s.
Right.
Is that not the craziest thing in the world? And in the 1800s, you're talking about like the Civil War and Abraham Lincoln and all the rest of it. You're like our connection to Abraham Lincoln, Jack, in Santa Monica. That's unbelievable.
And Teddy Roosevelt.
That just is the most beautiful thing. For a show today to talk about aging. So, Jack, let me give you some advice about the knee. Stay away from surgeons. Stay away from doctors. Stay away from the drug companies. Stay away from the shots. You've learned how to be holistic. You have such a beautiful attitude. You have such a beautiful embracement of life. If you can't walk anymore, then you come and see me and I'll tell you what to do. But until then, ride the bike, walk in the pool, go salsa dancing, look at pretty pictures of everything pretty that you can think of in life. And you need to teach us. Forget about Dr. Clapper teaching you. You can teach me a few things, Jack.
I doubt it, but that's good. In fact, I've been wearing a knee brace on my right.
Good.
My right knee.
Good.
Just recently went out, and it stabilizes it.
That's exactly right, Jack. Ride the bike, do the pool, wear the knee brace, and live happily ever after. You got a lot of years left, and keep laughing a lot. Let me ask you a question. What's the funniest movie you ever saw? You ever see The Birdcage? You ever see Caddyshack? What's the funniest movie for Jack in Santa Monica?
I would go back to, what was the name of that, where they switched...
Trading Places.
Sexes, you know, the...
Some Like It Hot?
Yeah, Some Like It Hot.
There you go. So you're a Marilyn Monroe fan.
Well, I love funny movies, and that was one of my favorites.
Tony Curtis, fantastic. You got great taste. You know, I tell you, Jack, you meet a total stranger. Like, today you're going to meet a total stranger. I'm meeting you, a total stranger. The quickest way, in my mind, to figure out everything about you is to ask you one question. And you know what the question is? What are your top five, not number one, your top five movies? By the time I get to the third movie with you, I know everything about you.
Yeah.
So now I know 33% about you because I know what your top one of your top five movies is. Anyway, thanks so much for checking in, Jack. We really appreciate it. God bless you. You're fantastic. Teddy Roosevelt. All right, let's take one more call. Okay, quick call. All right, let's go to Tony in Santa Clarita. You're on with Dr. Clapper and Dr. Stone. How can we help?
Hey, doctors. I am...
You're 49 years old. When's your birthday?
August 17th. I'll be 50 in August.
What are you going to do for your 50th birthday? Such a big birthday.
I'm going to Monterey and to play Pebble Beach and Spyglass.
That's it. That's what you do on your 50th birthday. I've done that. And you know what happened to me when I did that? Not for my 50th birthday. It was like a great bucket list to play Pebble Beach. I finished the 18th hole.
I played them before, but I want to go back
to play.
Well, this was for me. I couldn't wait. I bought the T-shirt. I got the hat. I was so excited. I get to the 18th hole. It's a bucket list. I'm so happy. A guy comes up to me wearing an Augusta National hat and an Augusta National hat. And I'm going, yeah. God damn. Well, you get out. He stole my thunder because, you ain't playing that round.
No, he wins.
Unless you get invited. Yeah, he wins. Exactly right. He wins. Good for you. What do you do for a living?
I'm an investigator. I'm a private investigator. Been doing it about 30 years. A lot of surveillance. I spy on people, basically.
Wow. You find who the girlfriend is or who the boyfriend is?
I'm currently spying on somebody right now while I'm on the phone.
Are you in a white van right now across the street from someplace?
No.
Should we be playing the music from Mission Impossible? Tony, that's right. Where'd you grow up?
Santa Clarita.
Really? You haven't left Santa Clarita. You're 49. You were born there. You grew up there. You haven't left Santa. Can I just tell you, there is a place called New York you should go visit.
I visited New York. Okay. No, I've been many places, but born and raised in Santa Clarita, and I still live there, yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic. Okay, how can we help you? What's up?
I'm a big, active guy. Most people, when they look at me, would guess me. I'm 6 feet tall. They guess me around 230, 240, but I'm actually about 280, 285. I even shocked my doctor when I stepped on the scale. He couldn't believe I was as heavy as I was. But
wow.
I used to bodybuild. I used to, competitively bodybuild years ago. I still work out. I don't bodybuild anymore, but I still lift a lot of weights. And
you know what Dr. Stone and I call you, Tony? We don't call you Tony. You know what we call you?
What's that?
Pre-op. That's what you are. We call you pre-op. That's your new name. So sooner or later, with all that weightlifting, I'm going to write another book. I've written a bunch of books. Heal your hips, heal your knees.
Heal your shoulders is going to be next.
Next with Dr. Stone. We're going to write it together. But my next book is going to be called, Tony, Stop Exercising, You're Killing Yourself. And then it's going to say, let me explain.
I still work out a lot. I do a lot of cardio. Good. And I'm very active. I play a lot of golf.
Good.
And a while back in the summer of this year, I felt like I twisted my knee one day hitting balls. I rested it for a little bit, and then I went back and was hitting balls, and I felt a really bad pop in the back of my knee. Mm-hmm. And I went into the doctor. They did x-rays, and, of course, the x-rays showed nothing. And
did they do an MRI?
Yes.
Do you have it in front of you? Do you have it in front of you?
No, I don't. But I'll tell you what it showed. They were really surprised by my size and everything. That the doctor said, "Wow, you got the cartilage of a 25-year-old." He was actually kind of shocked because he said the rest of my knees looked really good. But I tore my meniscus, but it was a root tear.
Good.
And so he said, basically, with a root tear, he goes, "There's really nothing I can do for you. We can't really surgically do anything."
That's not true, by the way. But are you still having symptoms? Does it still hurt?
Well, here's the thing: it doesn't bother me. When I first did it, it bothered me in the back of my knee, which made sense because that's where the tear is.
Right.
I get no discomfort or pain in the back of my knee anymore. Zero.
Good.
I get a little bit in the front inside of my knee, so the front lower inside portion of my kneecap, and it only happens when I'm walking. Oddly enough, I can still play golf. I can still swing a golf club. Even though I did it golfing, I can go to the driving range, I can play golf, and it doesn't bother me. I wear a brace.
How long ago was the first MRI, Tony?
July when I did it. July or August.
I only have about a minute left, so I don't mean to apologize for putting time pressure on us. But can I tell you what I would have you do? Obviously, don't let them give you a needle, a cortisone, stem cell, PRP. Don't anybody stick anything into your knee. But would be really good advice, because it's December. You did this in July. In a few months, if there are still symptoms, let's make a date. Let's call it April. If April 1st comes, you get to do anything with that knee. Play tennis, run around, go up a flight of steps. If it has still symptoms and it's April 1st, I need you to get a new MRI. And I would go to the same place he did the first one. Get the second one done, and then I'm giving you permission to call me, and we'll move you up the line. You'll have the MRI in front of you, and then I'm going to explain to you what you're going to do with this knee. I wouldn't do anything about it right now, but if there's still symptoms, because we're going to give it time to still go on to heal, a blister becomes a callus. But if, as Shakespeare said it best, to thine own self be true, if April 1st comes and there's still pain of any kind in your knee, you need a new MRI, and then I need you to call me, and I'll tell you what to do. Okay?
Well, I appreciate it. You're the first one to tell me that's good that I did a root tear.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly right. And by the way, I hope you find the bad guy that you're looking for today.
I appreciate it.
All right. God bless you, Tony. Talk to you later. All right, Warriors. The number's 877-710-ESPN. Can you believe it? Only one more segment. It's going to be a short one. I'm going to talk about what we're going to do next week, and I'll give you a hint. It has something to do with Eric Clapton and Cream. And guess what Dr. Stone is also an expert in? The guitar. So we're going to talk a little bit about Eric Clapton and the guitar coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on ESPN LA 710. I love this guy, George Michael. Last Christmas. Boy, do we miss him. To all those lines that are lit up, man, would I love to talk to you and teach you, and give you clapper vision. But guess what? I got to go off in a few minutes. So you need to call next week, and next week's going to be awesome. We're going to talk about Eric Clapton, my favorite musician, about Cream. And we're going to have Harvey Kubernick, who knows more about Eric Clapton than anybody else. But it was great having the great Dr. Michael Stone in the studio today. He and I did a shoulder surgery earlier in the week, and I will tell you, Dr. Stone, I made a house call on that patient. And doctors, young doctors like yourself, older doctors like me, doctors, you'll be around them, and all they'll do is complain about medicine, and it's terrible, and it's this, and I don't want to be around these people. But let me tell you something. I need you to do this, not just once, but do it once and see. Make a house call. Some elderly patient, I don't know how I'll be able to get to see you, Dr. Clapper. I really, but Trent, my daughter can't take it. You know what I say? Agnes, where do you live? What do you mean, where do I live? What's your address? When I'm done today seeing patients, I'm going to come to your house. And you got your white coat on, you park your car on the street, you ring the doorbell, and you look at the face of the patient. It's priceless. You want the respect. Don't ask it from the insurance company. They ain't going to give it to you. Don't ask it from the hospital. Don't ask it from the government. Go ring the doorbell. And you are standing there in front of your patient. They don't know what to say. It's one of the most awesome things to do. Once a quarter, four times a year, make a house call. It's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, we've really gotten away from that. I mean, that used to be kind of, you know, doctors making house calls. That's how medicine was.
It's and the greatest feeling that you'll have. And I just love chasing things in life that are priceless, things that are timeless. That's why I sculpt in marble. You have an appreciation for music beyond even that I have, because you actually play the guitar. Why do I love Michael Stone? Why do I love Eric Clapton? What does he do that you can teach me?
He pulls on your heartstrings. I mean, it's something that you can't explain. It's just, it's a feeling that you get when you watch somebody like that. And whenever I go to a show, I mean, wherever the guitar player is standing, that's right where I am, because I want to see what he's doing, how he's doing it, and how he, to correlate what I'm hearing with what he's doing. And I go back, I go home and I do it myself, or I used to, at least when I played a lot of guitar. I still play now, but that was it.
Thank you for being with us today. I leave you all with Volare, which in Italian means I'm singing and I'm flying, which we do every Saturday. Until next Saturday, I'll see you on the radio.
Thanks for having me.